Yes.
Hello there, and welcome to our very first IP Inclusive podcast on demystifying coaching. It's Wednesday, the 25th of September, 2019 here, and I'm Andrea Brewster, the lead executive officer of IP Inclusive. I'm going to be talking to Karen Crawley, who's an accredited development coach, and she's here today to help us demystify coaching and share how it can be useful for us, particularly in the IP world. Now, Karen Crawley has extensive experience as a patent attorney. She was actually working in the pharmaceutical industry for 30 years. She's also a CIPA fellow, so she's well aware of the challenges faced by attorneys at different points in their career. And in fact, as she's told me, she's faced many of those challenges herself. In the latter stages of her patent career, Karen found coaching to be transformational in how she thought and felt about challenges and to enable her to make faster and lasting progress in tackling those challenges. So over the past 5 years, she's turned her attention to becoming an accredited development coach herself. Karen now works primarily with people in the patent and legal professions to identify and clarify and then to achieve their personal and professional goals and to tackle the sort of issues that are holding them back, which can include, of course, personal perspectives and beliefs, routine behaviours and patterns of thinking, the old treadmill thing that we're all so familiar with. So I'm going to hand over to Karen now to start us off.
Well, thanks, Andrea, for that introduction, and hello to everyone listening.
So Karen, you need to start off, I think, by telling us what coaching actually is. Can you do that in a nutshell?
Well, I'm not sure I can do it in a nutshell, but maybe we should start with a definition. The International Coaching Federation defines coaching as partnering with clients in a thought-provoking and creative process that inspires them to maximise their personal and professional potential. So let's break that down a bit further. First of all, partnering. That's a really important aspect of coaching. The coachee is the expert in their own life, and the coach is the expert in the coaching techniques. And when we bring those two areas of expertise together, that's what makes the conditions for faster forward movement towards goals. It's a collaboration between equals, so it's a power-free relationship. And the next part of the definition, that coaching is a thought-provoking and creative process, is really facilitated by the coach's listening and questioning skills, creating space to think and pushing the thinking outside of the coachee's habitual patterns. Coaching can be a safe testing ground for ideas and experimentation. I mean, how often in these busy times do we actually pause to reflect on what we really want, what obstacles are in our way, and how we can overcome those obstacles? I guess the final part of that definition, that the work inspires the coachee to be more proactive in how they approach achieving their goals. It's not enough to want something, you have to get into action. I know that sounds obvious, but we really stand in our own way so often. The coach isn't going to tell the coachee what to do, because adults don't respond well to being told what to do. And coaching works because the dialogue encourages the coachee to design their own solutions and get into action.
So thought-provoking, creative and inspiring, that all sounds very good. And that's a great definition. And as we know, all legal professionals love a definition. But I presume you as a coach, from your own experiences, have a sort of pet way of summing this up for people?
Yeah, well, I like to describe coaching as having your own advocate in your back pocket, someone who's focused on and curious about your agenda, not their own. Coaching provides support and encouragement as well as accountability, stretching your current thinking into new areas to enable growth. I like to make the analogy of climbing a mountain with a Sherpa. The Sherpa guides the way, gives you tools to succeed, might even help carry your baggage, but ultimately you must walk the path yourself.
That's a really good analogy, the Sherpa, but I particularly like the advocate in your back pocket idea. Wouldn't we all like one of those? So, Karen, if the coach is listening and asking questions, isn't that a little bit like therapy?
Well, that's a great question, Andrea, and the answer is no. Whilst coaching can feel quite therapeutic and generally has a positive effect on well-being, it definitely isn't therapy. And here's the difference. Therapy is looking to resolve a past pain for a person, whereas coaching tends to focus on the present and future rather than the past, charting a path to reach an identified specific goal. This idea starts, I guess, from the premise that the coachee is creative, resourceful and whole. In other words, they already have everything they need to make progress on their goals. They don't need fixing, but the coach is going to help them identify and get really clear on the goals, get really clear on what the obstacles are, and devise and put into action how they want to move forward. Then the coach is going to help them get out of their way and into that action. We all know that there's never any change without focused action. So what I'd like to say, though, is that coaching does share something with therapy, and that's absolute confidentiality. The coach is never going to report back the content of coaching discussions to someone's manager. You know, for example, if it's coaching through sponsored through the workplace. This is really vital if the individual is going to be able to speak freely and share their concerns and ideas. It's a safe space and a creative space.
And that's a really important point, isn't it? If people are going to feel comfortable about tackling some of the things that have been holding them back. So what kind of goals then do people typically bring to coaching? What do they want to achieve?
Well, how long have we got today? That's an infinite question. In coaching, certainly the first step is to explore what the goals are and what the measures of success are going to be. It doesn't really matter what the goal is, so long as there's clarity on it. I can give a few examples. Building presence and impact in the workplace or impact with your client group. Might be self-confidence in specific situations that you find challenging. Tackling imposter syndrome. So that's when there's a feeling of not being adequately qualified or experienced, despite successes and much evidence to the contrary. It's the fear of being found out. I would also say overcoming procrastination. Even in this deadline-driven profession of ours, in the patent world, we have procrastination.
I would think especially in this deadline-driven profession of ours, because we always tend to leave things till that last minute, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that was one of my stumbling blocks on several occasions. But why do we put off tackling that big task until the last minute, despite the pressure that builds? How can we manage that better? That's a common coaching goal. What else? A couple of other things I think spring to mind. So maybe somebody wants more effective communication, either with their direct reports. They could be a new manager or an existing manager who now wants better communication. Maybe it's around liaising better with support staff, with your own manager or senior executives or your client group. There's quite a lot of things you can work on in the communication context with a coach. And then a common one is transitioning effectively between positions. So if you've got a big step up in responsibility, so you might be newly qualified to associate or senior associate to partner, role transition, how can you really manage that and be at your best through the transition process? And I think finally, I'd say another coaching goal would be feeling lost in your career, wondering what's next for you, maybe wanting to re-engage with the energy you used to have with your career.
And building on that point, do people sometimes come to you with that feeling of being perhaps a little bit trapped in their current role?
Yes, that happens as well. What is that feeling of being trapped about? What's causing it? What does the person want? Really trying to resolve and get clear on that so that the person can move forward.
So I'm interested to know from this then, do you sometimes find that clients come to you with one goal and then during the course of the coaching, a different goal emerges?
Yes, that often happens, in fact. So the client identifies the initial goal, but through the coaching process, something gets uncovered that's important to the client. And in that case, we would recontract to establish the new focus for the coaching. You can certainly change or add goals as appropriate.
So what I'm hearing is that coaching can be very flexible then. Now, I've heard people say that they think coaching is for people who aren't performing well. So they don't want a coach because they don't want other people to think they're struggling or that they've failed. What would you say to that? Because it doesn't sound to me as though that's what you're talking about here.
Yes, that's a common misperception about coaching. If I asked you to think about other contexts of the term coaching, what might come to mind?
Oh, I'm thinking probably sports coaching. That's an obvious one.
Yep, that's a great example. Strong athletes and sports people always have a coach to help them define their goals and make progress towards them more quickly than they might do on their own. That doesn't make them a poor athlete. It makes them focused, determined, open to feedback and growth. Let's just take a quick example. Think about Andy Murray. He was progressing well in the tennis world, got to several Grand Slam finals, but he just wasn't quite getting over that finish line to become champion. Murray switched coaches to work with Ivan Lendl, focus on his goal of winning a major tournament. And he then won what? Olympic gold, the US Open and Wimbledon during a two-year period. Would he have accomplished that if he had carried on doing what he was already doing? Maybe, maybe not. Lendl helped Murray to clarify what he needed to change in order to gain an edge over the competition and achieve that goal of winning. I think that part of that was about what Andy believed was possible, not what he wished would happen, but what he truly believed would happen. And that's the difference.
And part of that also seems to be tied up with finding the right coach. You said Andy Murray switched to Lendl as his coach.
Yes, that's right. So different coaches bring different perspectives, and it is important to find a coach with whom you're comfortable and who you feel can help you with your particular goals.
Okay, well, we'll return to that later about how you pick the right person for you. But we've talked there about the sports coaching example. But who uses coaches in the business world typically?
Well, I think it might surprise listeners to know that in the corporate world, almost all CEOs and the majority of vice presidents work with a coach to help them transition into new stretch roles or when they're facing particularly challenging situations. In fact, many companies are now bringing the advantage of coaching to their first line managers and to their directors in order to help them develop more quickly as well. It's often the case that managers are expected to adopt a coaching approach with their own direct reports to help maximise the performance of the individuals in their team. And a great way to develop your own coaching skills is to experience coaching for yourself. To turn back to the legal world, though, it's also becoming more common for new partners in the legal profession to have a coach. I would say that there are several key stages in a legal career where coaching can be highly beneficial. And they would be the sort of the transitions I referred to earlier, for example, newly qualified to associate, senior associate to partner, partner to senior partner, and so on. Times when you might be feeling stuck or unclear about the direction you want your career to take. That's another situation. And maybe if you've received some feedback that you feel you'd really like to work on, but you can't see a way forward.
So what I'm hearing then is that coaching is not for poor performers at all, really, quite the opposite sometimes.
Yeah, it's not a replacement for effective performance management of staff by the managers. It's a way to help motivated people raise their game and achieve their focus goals more quickly. So development opportunities.
So, Karen, should you wait until that transition, or should coaching perhaps be introduced earlier on in someone's career, almost to preempt the difficult times when they're going through a transition in the future?
Yeah, good question. I think that the thing that defines the right time to work with a coach is when you've got a defined goal. So if there's an area you feel you'd like to pay particular attention to and you want some support with that, then consider working with a coach. I think it's more about, do you have a defined goal, or at least an area that you can hone in on with the coach?
So some kind of problem, or do you say goal, that you can articulate and then make that the basis for the coaching?
Yes, that's right. So it doesn't have to be when you've arrived at a transition point. It can be at any time. Those are just sort of examples that might create a situation where coaching can help.
Okay. So now, Karen, what can you tell us about the practical aspects of having a coach? Because I think a lot of people would want to know this. What's the time commitment? What's the likely cost? How do you actually find a coach?
Well, the first thing to say is that coaching engagements are finite. They're not an ongoing situation. You agree a goal or a set of goals that you want to work towards and decide on a coaching program that will support you in that. And of course, each program has an associated cost. So typically, one might have coaching sessions bi-weekly for 3 months for a short-term goal, for example, or monthly for 6, 9, or even 12 months for a longer-term goal. And the duration of sessions can also vary. I would say typically 30 minutes for bi-weekly sessions and an hour or 90 minutes for monthly sessions works really well. So there are a few parameters that need to be discussed and agreed in each context. But once that's been done, then you've got a finite period of time to work on that goal.
And I think that will interest people to hear that you know that you can define at the beginning how long you're going to be spending and presumably therefore how much it's going to cost. So people have an idea before they start of what the commitment will be.
Yes, that's absolutely right. But in terms of time commitment, it's more than just attending the scheduled sessions. There will be agreed actions to be worked on between sessions. And so you should be prepared to set aside some time for this if you're going to get the most out of coaching. And also some time for reflecting on your progress ahead of the coaching session itself. Successful outcomes really depend on the coachee doing this work.
And can I ask, are these sessions typically face-to-face, or could they be by phone or Skype, or how do you normally do things?
Any of the above. Very often the early sessions might be face-to-face to help to establish that working relationship, but it's not a requirement. I do a lot of coaching internationally by video conferencing and also coaching just by audio telephone call. It's very, very flexible and can be discussed and agreed as a way of working with each person.
Yeah. So it's sounding very much like a collaborative process then, is that what you're saying?
That's right, yes. And where we set the goals at the beginning, we also determine some measures for success. So we can check in, how are we doing? Are we making progress? What more do we need to do in order to get you where you need to be?
So it seems to me then that it's really going to depend on finding someone that you gel with, someone you feel comfortable talking to, somewhere, I guess, where there's that chemistry as there was between Andy Murray and Ivan Lendl. How do you find the right coach for you then?
Well, I would recommend meeting with two or three coaches before choosing who to proceed with. It's important for you to feel comfortable with your coach. Most coaches will offer a free chemistry session in which you can really get a sense of rapport and how it would be to work with them. And that also provides an opportunity to discuss the conditions for working together. So what's the medium you're going to use, face-to-face or video or whatever? Recommendations can be useful, of course. If you know someone who's had coaching, ask if they'd recommend their coach. Also, some firms have a number of coaches they've worked with in the past, so your HR manager could be another source of contacts. But if you don't have any leads, a good place to start is the International Coach Federation website, which provides a list of accredited coaches who've all been through stringent training and examination.
So a request to people in the IP Inclusive community then from me, if you've had some coaching and you liked what you saw and you liked the person you worked with, then please do feedback to us so that we can share recommendations and contacts. And Karen, to finish up, what would you advise anyone who's thinking about having some coaching themselves or thinking that coaching would be useful for their team? What are the key things they need to do?
I think I'd say find a coach and give them a call. I'm sure they'd be happy to talk through ideas and questions and to discuss the kind of coaching programs that they can offer. If you think coaching might be useful for a person other than yourself, though, do talk to that person about it. Engage their interest. A coach can't successfully coach an unwilling coachee.
No, I can imagine that. That sounds fair enough. I know when you said give a coach a call, that you've also told us that you'd be happy to be that person that they did call if people are interested in contacting you.
Yes, absolutely.
So thank you very much for that. If anyone in the IP Inclusive community is interested in speaking with Karen about what she can help with and whether she might be a good coach for you, you can contact her through her website, which is karencrawleycoaching.co.uk. And she has said, for which we're very grateful, she'd be happy to help people in IP Inclusive, as indeed she's been very kind giving her time here for this podcast today. So as a follow-up to this podcast, we will be posting some more links to interesting articles and useful resources. So keep an eye on the resources page of the IP Inclusive website for those. And as I said, do share your own experiences on coaching because we can then distribute those through the wider community and we can all get more engaged with this topic. In the meantime, thank you very much, Karen Crawley, for joining us in this podcast.
Oh, you're more than welcome. It's been a pleasure.
It's been great to talk to you too. I hope it's been useful to you, the listener, as well. So thank you very much and goodbye.
Thanks, Andrea, and goodbye.